Start to like form opinions, really important to listen to sex workers or see what sex workers themselves want. Yeah.
Welcome to Sack Me Play, the podcast that features queer filmmakers and filmmaking. This episode is a discussion about Tove Pihl's documentary Labour between me, Sam Message, and filmmaker Tove, as well as sex worker Ruby, from Red Umbrella Sweden, an organization and community for sex workers. The conversation took place following a screening of Labour at LGBTQI+ Film Festival Film Out West at Hagabion in Gothenburg 2023. In the film, we follow Hannah as she leaves her family behind to go to the city of her dreams, San Francisco, where she hopes to explore her sexuality. At a party, she meets the professional dominatrix Chloe and escort Sid. Throughout the documentary, we follow Hannah, Sid, and Chloe's journeys to gain an intimate insight into their own experiences with sex work. By following these individuals over a period of 10 years, the film dives deep into the lives of queer sex workers on their own terms. Through this powerful lens, the film exposes the profound impact of the intense stigma surrounding sex work, both in San Francisco and even more so within the often heated debate in the Swedish context.
I've always had this longing. Felt like life is happening somewhere else. Like I'm waiting to finally be everything I can be. A while ago, I met some queers. Some of them were from San Francisco. I got the feeling of the city being some kind of queer sex heaven.
God, it's so hard. There's nowhere we can live that's not San Francisco.
It's true.
It's not true.
Where there's going to be lots of queers who are having the kind of sex we want to have and having fun.
That's how you know you're in San Francisco, motherfucker.
I'm falling in love with a place. I have to find a way to stay. Many of my new friends here are sex workers. I've been thinking that maybe I could try to do sex work, but it could make it possible to stay here longer.
I am super excited to be here talking to you both today. What a important film, what a great film. And what I think is so fitting for just this discussion is, you know, in the film, we travel over to San Francisco and we go deep into this world. And then at the end, we come back to Sweden. So now we're landing on the plane and landing straight into this discussion about the Swedish context. So big welcome to you two. Thank you so much for speaking to me today. Just one more applaud for these two. Great. So I think we just dive straight into it because time is always ticking. Tove, I wanted to start with a question for you. And that was, this film has been, it's been a big success. I've seen film visningar, screenings up and down the country. And so congratulations for that. But what I wanted to ask you is, how do you feel that the film has been received here in Sweden?
I think that in a way, I guess it's been like a little bit therapeutic to also finally screen it, of course. But I think that it's been really nice, especially to get to screen it in places where there's a lot of queers in the audience. I think that while making the film, I've kind of felt really, in a way, alienated from the Swedish queer community and from the Swedish left-wing scene and feminist community. And I think that, you know, like organizations, it wasn't Red Umbrella, but like the previous sex worker organizations in Sweden weren't welcome or are still, I guess, not sometimes in 8th of March demonstrations. So I like stopped going to 8th of March demonstrations. And it's so weird when it's like, even like when I went to Valand, for example, like people are more open, but it's like the people that I used to be close to and that I used to kind of, you know, do political work with or activism were the ones that were maybe less open to listening to sex workers. And I think that screening the film here at least a little bit has made me also see like how many allies there are and that maybe things are changing a little bit. And but, you know, then also people come up and you get to hear like support for sex workers and that the film is important to people. So that's been really, really great. And we screened it in a Cinema Queer, the Queer Film Festival. And my producer, Melissa Lingen, who's not here today, but she also is doing that festival. And I know that they got a lot of positive feedback from like the queer community. So I think things like that has been really, and getting to do, we have done like one conversation before and like sitting with different members from Red Umbrella and talking about the film and like the audience questions and stuff. That's been really amazing. And also, of course, and when it's like small screenings and it's like five people over 70 years old that maybe are not so familiar with the queer community. And it's like, I don't know, I think a lot of people start to think about their own lives and what choices they've made around work. And that's also really nice conversations to me. I want people to think about privilege and what work is. But I also, I think that there have been some reviews. There was a review in the Swedish newspaper Sydsvenskan when we had a premiere there. I know this is also in Swedish, but I think this is like a very, like the way that I'm also used to people kind of talking about sex workers. So the review is not like the headline, once it said sex work in the headline, but then she kind of ends the review with like, it talks about, or rather they talk about through the main characters about prostitution as any job. And I hear the well-expressed, I don't know if that's the right word in English, but välformulerade, well-expressed Sid and Chloe create stories about themselves as if everything were a choice and a plan. Is it the whole truth, or is it an ideological, individualistic imperative to tell the story about your life in that way? And I think, you know, like, I guess like it's in a newspaper, they want to kind of be safe that it's not like their opinion. But I think I don't care so much about word. I know there's like in other countries, like really cool sex work organization that bring back the word prostitute and like use that, you know. It's not like, I think to respect what people choose to use for themselves. And I also don't think that like you don't have to have the same idea about what sex work is to use the word sex work. You know, we use barnarbete or children's labor, you know, like it's not like you necessarily have to think that that's right. You know, when we talk about household work, we still use the word work. Like the definition can be many different things. And I kind of want to ask her how she sees her life. Like, did she think that she, when she was choosing if she wanted to go to be like a journalist or if she wanted to go to Ghana and be a volunteer, like worker, did she feel that it was a choice? I mean, you know, like work, I think that privilege, I maybe said it before, but I think we have to talk about choice when it comes to work, because if you have more choices, that means you're privileged, you know, like privilege is also having more choices. And of course, like, it doesn't have to be a choice always, you know, like we all have to work in some way, most people, if you're not super rich. But I think that for me, I think it's like an important discussion to have. And here, like, to write it off as like individualistic, we live in this capitalist, individualistic society, and sex workers are not different from other people in getting to talk about these things in the same way. Yeah, so I wanted to bring it up too, that like some of the things that come up now when we screen it are of course like this, and it's like what I kind of was like preparing for and like worried about, of course. But I still feel like, you know, it's taken so long to make it, and I think that like now screening it, it's also like I've had those lines, or like I've heard them so many times that I'm used to it now. And I think that the most like amazing thing is to like meet the audience and actually get to talk about the film. But I think it's important to raise that it's still this way of thinking that you know so much better, or that you can see it more clearly than the people that are actually sex workers.
I'm very glad to hear that there's some glimmer of hope that maybe things are changing here. But obviously, you know, that resistance is still there. And there's this very specific discourse around this in Sweden. And this is something that I wanted to put to you, Ruby, because, you know, like was written in this article, in the film, we see how Sid and Chloe really set their own boundaries and they explore, or they do sex work kind of on their own terms. And I listened to an interview with you on Sveriges Radio, where Tove, you were asked if this kind of perspective on sex work was kind of specifically American, which I think is kind of resonating with what's in this article. And that really made me think of this idea of, you know, Swedish exceptionalism and how the Nordic model has been really touted around the world as like, wow, Sweden is this feminist utopia, you know, and it's been this big feminist success. So I wanted to ask you, Ruby, if you could just tell us a little bit about what the Nordic model is and why you think it either works or doesn't work. Open question.
Yeah, thank you. Like the Nordic model, what sets the Nordic model apart is that it criminalizes the buyers while making it legal to sell sex. And I think just the concept of that in and of itself is ridiculous. Like imagine you're a baker, but no one is allowed to buy your bread. And they claim that this is to protect us and to help us out. While in reality, I could go on and on for hours. But like one example is because of the stigma and because of it being illegal to buy, we have to take a lot more risk with our clients. Clients are much less willing to be screened, to give up information, because they know that they might not only face legal consequences, but also the consequences of stigma that comes with it of purchasing sexual services. So it puts sex workers in a lot more dangers. And the Swedish model is also, it works together with a law called kopplerilagen, which basically means that if you do anything that helps a sex worker do their job, you're guilty of pimping them. So that means just a small thing like giving us condoms is illegal. Or let's say you're doing your job out of your apartment, and if your landlord finds out, they have to evict you, or they stand the risk of being charged with pimping. And we have members in Rädda Barnen who have faced this, who have been evicted. So to say that the Swedish model helps sex workers and helps women is like ridiculous, in my opinion. And I think the Swedish model isn't there to help sex workers, it's there to eliminate sex workers and to keep making it as impossible as they can for us to do our job and to do it safely. And if they really cared about us, like even if they don't consider sex work work, if you care about the actual sex workers, the people doing this, then you would do what we know works for people doing work. You give them rights, you empower them, you give them choices. So if you want to do sex work, you should have as much security and possibilities to do that as safely as possible. And if you don't want to do sex work, but you're forced to, or you're in a situation in your life where that's the best choice you have as many possibilities and as many rights to get out of sex work and do something else. But that's not what the Swedish model does. It increases the stigma, it punishes us, and it's not in our favor. And yeah, I think thinking that it's like feminist utopian model that, in the best interest from us, is just propaganda and lies.
Enthusiastic agreeing from the public. No, I think, you know, this is really important that you raise these points, and really important that more and more people can understand that, because it's also, you know, touting this idea of decriminalization, but of course it's not decriminalized in a lot of ways. And there's this kind of horrific double standard where the architects of this project have also admitted that this is going to deeply negatively impact those who it's supposed to be so-called saving.
I just want to add another thing that it does because of how it cooperates with the kopplerilagen. It makes it illegal for us sex workers to work together. So if we want to work together to increase our safety, because, you know, safety numbers, if something happens, you have other people there, it makes it illegal for us to work with each other, which is also like a ridiculous aspect of the law.
Yeah, frankly, pretty horrific. Yeah, so we've talked now, we've got some more background on the Swedish context, but obviously this film has been shown in a lot of other places as well, Tove, and I wanted to ask, what's been the reception, you know, including in San Francisco, what's been the reception to this film around the world?
I mean, I think that, like, in San Francisco, it was a great screening, but I think I also realize more, I mean, there is so much already about this, but of course it's like a really nice to have an audience that like all, so many are sex workers and so many are like recognizing themselves in the film and things like that. And then I screened it in a sex worker film festival in Dublin. And I think that, like, you know, it's a little smaller place. And I think it's like more of a, it's not as like San Francisco has so many sex workers, so much activism around it. And I think that that was also really, really nice to just like, it was sex workers in the, like that were on stage afterwards and talking about it. And I don't know, I think that those are like some of the festivals that's been really, and I showed it in the Porn Film Festival in Berlin. Like mainly I think it's been amazing to screen it also in places, like to go between Sweden and small screenings in like Västerås and then go to Dublin and have the screening in the Sex Worker Film Festival, and to be able to kind of just also get that energy and remember like and see that people recognize themselves in the film. But I also think that I've like see, or like I talked about before, that I think that I've been kind of amazed how the response has been in the audience in Sweden. And I think it's made, like, since I'm from Sweden, it's also a lot of the reasons why I wanted to make the film was because of how it was for my friends here that were sex workers. And I wanted to show how it was for my friends in San Francisco to do it in like a queer community where it's other norms around sexuality, and where it's like, you know, you can come home to your friends and talk about an annoying client, and it's not like they're gonna be like, oh, you have to stop, or like they will help you to maybe find ways of how you want to deal with it the next time. And so I think that I also realized that, of course, it's similar in many places in the world to Sweden. You know, it's not like if they go back to their families, it's not like Chloe's parents are, they don't know about that she's a sex worker. So I think that, like, we all come from little tiny cities, or not all, but, you know, many of us, and it's similar. But it's still, sometimes I can feel like it's been nice to also see that, or to kind of understand that it have affected the film, that this was one of the reasons that I wanted to do it, to kind of also hope to have like get people to change their perspective, or at least have like a discussion about sex work in a different way in Sweden and in the Nordic countries where it's similar.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really shows like the power of doing things within the community and the power of also reaching outside of the community. And they're both really important projects and important things to be doing. I wanted to come back to this this kind of stunning fact that this film was made over a period of 10 years. it's something that makes it so intimate and so unique to get this like look into the experiences of Sid and Chloe. And just kind of going to the practicality of that, I'm so curious to hear about, you know, when did you know what this film was actually going to be about? And how do you even start going through 10 years of material? How do you do that?
I mean, I did not really know that the film was going to look like it does now until maybe 5 years ago. I had just shot footage of my friends and a lot of other people than the people that are in the film now. So when I started to study at HDK of Åland, the film school here in Gothenburg, I applied with this project, and I had been kind of stuck or not working on the project for a couple of years because it was, I think, like the anonymity aspect of it, or like being worried about how it would affect the people in the film to be in the film. And so I kind of got back to that all the time. And then my teacher there, she said, like, you have to find a way around it. So that's like kind of when we started to develop, like, the, I tried different ways actually to kind of anonymize, like make the people in the film anonymous. But this, the voiceover, I feel like it worked. I mean, I don't think I even understood in the beginning when I tried it in which ways that it would work. But for me, it felt after a while like it was a way to get like a different kind of tempo, like, or like pace in the film, like that could slow down a little bit. And they talk really fast sometimes. And but it was also a way I realized after a while that the whole film became like in a shape or a form that was about anonymity, which I think for me felt also really symbolic and important, because I think most sex workers deal with this in one way or another. Maybe have a lot more to lose than Hannah does in the film. Like they get deported or lose custody of their children or other things, you know. So in that sense, I felt like the whole film kind of has that form. And and that started to develop while I was in the master's program. Mm. And then like I have a lot of footage, but it's not like I haven't filmed for those, you know, like especially in the beginning, I just took up my camera sometimes and was filming. And of course it's a lot, but mainly it was hard to kind of weave it together. And also the voiceover, to work with voiceover helped with that, to have like Hannah's story kind of be the story that the audience gets to travel with to San Francisco.
To structure the narrative, yeah. I want to come back to something that you were talking about with the changing of tempo within the film. But first I wanted to come back to you, Ruby, with this kind of, you know, you were talking about what sex workers have to deal with in this context and kind of bring it back talking about the Swedish context. We see so many different sides of sex work in this film. You know, Sid and Chloe kind of expose that it can be exciting, it can be erotic, it can be care work, it can be just very mundane and everyday, it can be very boring. In the end, it's work, you know. Sometimes you want to do it, sometimes you just don't want to do it. But at the end of the day, it's a way to open financial doors. And I wanted to know, kind of from your own work and your knowledge of the community, how similar are these experiences and these perspectives? How do they translate to sex workers here in Sweden?
Yeah, I'd say there's a lot of similarities. And sex work is a relatively high-paid job that doesn't require any form of education or anything. So it's something that anyone can do. So in that aspect, it really opens up financial opportunities. Yeah, I would say there are a lot of similarities. Some people like me can afford to be very open about us doing sex work and like sit on panels like this and talk about it. While there are others who can't be open either because of family situations or that they have other jobs or they're in a position in society or because they're migrants. And unfortunately, if you're a migrant doing sex work, it's considered dishonest work. So you will be deported if you are caught doing sex work as a migrant in Sweden. So the levels of openness regarding sex work varies a lot. But I think no matter how open you are, the stigma is always there and you will be judged. But I think it feels like it's a common thing throughout the world when it comes to sex work, that there is a lot of stigma and the level of anonymity varies a lot. And We have members in Red Umbrella that are very open, some that aren't very open. We have people who have like extremely vulnerable positions in society, where like if it went out that they're sex workers, it would have huge consequences of their lives. Whereas me, I'm more like kind of white trash. I don't have a lot of loot, so I'm fine like talking about this. And I feel like I have a bit of a responsibility to be visible and show like, hey, we whores exist. We're not just in the shadows of society everywhere. So yeah, it varies a lot, but I think there's a lot of similarities to the positions they have and to the lives that they live in San Francisco. And yeah, it's definitely a job. Like sometimes, especially when I started it, it was super exciting. Like, oh my God, I'm getting paid to do this. Like, oh my God, I'm getting paid to have sex in a way that I would do anyway. But over time, doing this a few years, it's become more and more a job. And sometimes it's super, still super exciting. The sex is great. And a lot of the times you're like, oh, I wonder what I'm going to do tonight. Well, you're getting fucked in the ass, you know? So it varies a lot.
I think that's very relatable for a lot of jobs.
I don't think I'm going to survive the nonprofit grind much longer, though. I'll tell you, it's killing me right now. It's grinding my soul into dust. And I'm realizing that trying to earn a living doing good work is actually futile because I'm being blocked at every turn by systems and individuals who don't actually care about that work and who see it as a racket for them to cash in on. And that's just so gross and uninteresting to me that I can't be a part of it. So, you know, it's ironic that people try to act like sex work is an immoral thing. I think actually most work is immoral. I think sex work is by far the most ethical work I've done in my life. Not the most, but it's pretty high up there.
In the film, we really see how Hannah is struggling with this question of coming out, because it's a coming out process, right? You know, she's really worried about whether she's going to be accepted or rejected, or what kind of reactions people are going to have. And you mentioned a little bit about this process, but what was it like coming out? How did it feel? What was it like for you?
For me personally, it's been kind of a mixed bag. I try to live my life, emphasize try. If someone can't accept me for who I am and what I do, then fuck you. But unfortunately, especially since I'm a lot in leftist circles and anarchist circles, there's still a lot of prejudice and judgment there. And I can give one example. A fellow sex worker and me held a presentation about sex work and the Swedish model at a socialist event. And it basically resulted in the organizer getting death threats and a lot of racist bullshit and just harassment for even like hosting us and doing this event. So it's been a mixed bag. Personally, I basically just hang around with either other sex workers or people who are fine with me doing sex work. And I have the privilege to have that kind of life. I don't really have to interact or be with people who would judge me in that way. So I'm very privileged in that way. Like my sister, when I came out to my sister, I haven't fully come out to my sister, but she's very supportive and she's always been supportive. And I don't have the closest relationship to my parents, so I don't really care much about what they would think. But generally, I would say that my experience of coming out has been a lot more positive than it's general for people. So I've been very lucky in that way and have had a lot of support also through Red Umbrella Sweden, where we have a very strong internal community of support. So personally, I would say I'm a lot more luckier than most.
Du lyssnar på Suck Me Play.
That's really great to hear. And again, just shows how important it is to be able to have community around you. And so shocking that that becomes so difficult in this context. Yeah, I wanted to come back to you, Tove, again with this question of kind of coming out, because making this film and publishing this film is also some kind of coming out. I wanted to ask you how it's been to be a filmmaker, which is now publicly affiliated with kind of bringing up these topics and processing these topics within this context.
I mean, I don't really think it's a big difference now than from before. Of course, it's like different to talk in front of more people, but also all through the process, in a way, I've been talking so much to people. I mean, we will see. I think that like the film and how it can be like connected and like making like conversations like this with Red Umbrella, I think it's a nice way that it's that there is a Swedish film about sex workers like this one. And so hopefully like it will continue to kind of be a part of what can be used in like conversations. And I think that also hopefully will, you know, just that that's there, I think, in some way makes a difference. Because 10 years ago or 13 years ago, I think there is so little coming out from the sex worker community because it's so hard to do these kind of things. I'm also like hoping maybe it's possible to do like anonymous kind of films also with more sex workers in Sweden or something like that, or interviews. Yeah, I think that it can be really problematic that you have to come out, and then who can talk about their life? And then there's only the ones that maybe don't have so much to lose or already has lost everything because they came out, you know? So I think it's important to kind of continue to like, how do we tell the stories without having to always put someone that has to be like representative? Yeah. Also, of course, it's great when you can start, more people can start to come out, but I don't think we really, it's still really hard to
it's
do
hard
that.
To be the figurehead, for sure. I see Anna making symbols at me. One question, if we have time for one little finishing sentence each. Very short one. Is it possible for you to give us just one quick sentence of what you want the audience to take away with them from this? Nice and short and snap.
Sex workers work, and if you support workers' rights, you should support sex workers.
Lovely.
I mean, I don't know if it's like get it take away from this, but I hope, like, for me at least, it was like eye-opening to start to realize when I was younger, I've had all these opinions around sex work, and I never actually really looked up like sex workers organizations. So I want to encourage everyone to look up Red Umbrella Sweden, but also there are really sex workers organizations all around the world. And I think that before we start to like form opinions, like really important to listen to sex workers or see what sex workers themselves want. Yeah. And it's also super interesting, like Thai sex work organization Empower have made like a lot of really fun films that we screened in an exhibition, one of them. So I think that there's so much out there. So please look up. And also go see Kokomo City. That's a really important film about sex work too, playing in this festival.
Amazing. Amazing tips as well. Well, I'll give one final applause to my fantastic guests here tonight. Thank you so much. Thank you.